Good afternoon. The Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Wednesday, March 9th. The time is 1:30 p.m. We're meeting in Capitol, in the State Capitol Room, number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Keel, Senator Schauer, Senator Hughes, Senator Myers, and myself as Chair, Senator Holland. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Alex, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. At this time, I'm going to bring Senate Bill 187 back before the committee. Senate Bill 187 is related to sex offenses. This is the fifth hearing for Senate Bill 187, and we do have a committee substitute for this bill. Senator Schauer, would you care to make a motion?
Indeed, I would, Mr. Chair. I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 187, Work Order 32-GS2031-4/G as our working document.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. I will object for discussion. Mr. King, please walk us through the changes in the committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, staff to Senator Holland. Mr. Chairman, the committee substitute makes several changes. I'll just read through them quickly and the department can answer questions. First change is in version G, the version that's before you now, adds new sections 1 through 7, altering the language in AS 1141-410 through 1141-430. This is a change in the definition of consent, closes the loophole regarding non-consensual sexual contact without the use of force, and creates a clear gradation of sexual assault classifications. Sections 1 and 2 of version A were deleted to conform with a reclassification. Section 3 of version A is now section 9 of version B. It removes the areas of the body that are covered under the sexual assault charges or statutes and adds the pelvis and inner thigh to the Class A misdemeanor harassment law. Section 8 of version G is new language to update what it means to publish an image of a minor to the internet. Next change is a conforming change made to section 4 of version A, which is now section 10. No changes were made to sections 5 or 6 of version A. They're renumbered to sections 11 and 12. Section 7 of version A, which is now section 13, the requirement to appear in person when making or changing travel plans was deleted. Section 8 of version A, which is now section 14, was a technical change. In section 9 of version A, which is now section 15, the sex offender registration requirement of 1161-116-C2 was amended so that it is registrable on the first offense if the image includes the victim's name and on the second offense otherwise. There was a technical drafting change made to sections 10 through 14 of version A, which are now numbered 16 through 20. Section 15 of version A was deleted due to deletion of the proposed AS 1161-117, which was the Class C felony harassment charge in the original bill. There were no changes to Section 16 of Version A. It's renumbered to Section 21. Section 17 of Version A was deleted to preserve the Class A misdemeanor harassment law, and there were no changes to the applicability or effective date sections.
Thank you, Mr. King. I will remove my objection with no further objection. Version G is our working document, and I will invite the Department of Law to the presenter's table at this time, Ms. Schroeder. Can you talk to us about the implications of the changes in the committee substitute?
Certainly. For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. So I won't run through all of the changes that Mr. King just went through, but I'll just note for you, the major changes are, of course, the changes to the sexual assault statutes, as we are redefining the definition of without consent. And then, of course, there is a rewrite of the harassment statute. Those are the main statutes that are impacted by the CS. The reason for the change for the sexual assault statutes is that, as Mr. Skidmore has probably mentioned to you before, in order for something to qualify as sexual assault in Alaska, there needs to be the threat of force or the use of force. Without that, any sort of sexual contact is not, or penetration does not qualify as sexual assault. And that ignores how these offenses generally happen. It ignores the freeze response from victims, and we wanted to be able to address that. In the original version, we tried to kind of get at that through the harassment statute, but that's, of course, not addressing the heart of the issue. And so we j- just decided to go for it. We've gotten the administration to approve this approach. This is an approach that has been discussed by some members of the legislature since 2019. And it's also an approach that has been adopted by several other states. I think if you look at Montana, some of this language is almost verbatim. So we decided to attack the issue head on, and that's why we've made those changes, to try to do better for victims.
Senator Hughes?
I just want to thank the department for the responsiveness, because I think it was maybe in the very first introduction to this bill, I noted on the record that we were addressing it at the harassment level, and it just didn't seem right not to be addressing it at the more serious level. So I really appreciate the fact that you all took that to the heart, and some of the work that you've been doing last few years as we've had these discussions, that you pinned it down and you got the nod from the governor to bring it forward. I think it's overdue, but I am very glad to see it before us. Thank you.
All right. Senator Schauer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Two things. If you could, Casey, if there's any data, and if it's not available off the top of your head, that's fine, for those other states on if they've seen any reduction. If you have data, that's great. If you don't, if it maybe could grab something that we could put on the record with the committee, because it would help. This is kind of like back to the SB 91 battle we had. You know, you put something down, but then what happens to your crime statistics, and you need to respond to those. So that data may be there to help already if we could. Okay. And then the second thing is, I know, and this is just more of a comment, Mr. Chair, but as we work through this, we're going to have to keep a close eye on it, because one of the concerns we had is both balancing both sides, and we have certainly had some internal discussions about that, of making sure that this does not become so tight that, you know, you have, for example, the college party, and somebody's out there on the floor, and I know the answer was we would never do that, and you take the entire event into context, but there is concern from some of us that putting this on as the intent, Mr. Chair, is that we are not taking a step so far forward that we are going to start ruining people's lives, especially when they're younger and, you know, they have a party and they get drunk and they do something stupid, and we don't want to ruin the rest of their life. So there is a balance to be had here, and we're going to have to be very cautious of that. And I'm going to do my best to pay attention to where these cases go with this law, if this becomes law, with these changes, because that is something that, like I said, we've had a lot of internal debate about, making sure that we are not criminalizing people that are not that shouldn't be criminalized because of the conditions. And so, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to get that on the record with the Department of Law. They answered a lot of those questions, but certainly this could maybe take a step too far. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Senator Q.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Schroeder, if we could get a little bit, just another inch deeper on our analysis here, can you talk, I think, maybe first about the levels of offense for how it differs with use of force or without consent? Maybe that's a good place to start, and just how we address the severity.
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Keel. So the first place I would recommend the committee look is on page 4, where we talk about the definition of without consent. Without consent means that under the totality of the circumstances of the offense, there was not a freely given, reversible agreement specific to the conduct at issue. And those elements are the important elements. Those are the elements that we see running through other states that have adopted this type of approach. It needs to be freely given, it needs to be reversible, and it needs to be analyzed under a totality of the circumstances. Freely given is defined as a positive expression of agreement by word or action given under the person's free will. And then in section 4, it runs through a bunch of further descriptors of what without consent would look like. For example, an expression of lack of consent through words or conduct would mean that there's no consent. And I want to be clear with the committee, under current law, if a victim says no, and there is no force, that is not a sexual assault. So this would remedy that exact thing. And then we go on in section 2 to talk, on line 18, page 4, to talk about a current or previous dating, social, or sexual relationship by itself is not enough. And then also there's something in there about the manner of dress. Sub 3 talks about professional purpose, and this is where somebody says, I need to touch you in this way because this is what is therapeutic. And so the victim is basically coerced by fraud to believe that that's therapeutic when it actually is a sexual assault. So that's what we have there. Note that there is no mention of force. The current definition of without consent talks about force or the threat of force. So when we get to force, that's on page 1. So page 1 is sexual assault in the first degree, and that's when you have sexual penetration with the use of force or the threat of force, or if the defendant causes the victim to become incapacitated. That is current law. So nothing changes with the unclassified offense. At the highest level, there is no change. Section 2 on page 2 talks about sexual contact with the use of force or threat of force, or if the defendant causes the victim to become incapacitated. Again, current law. There is no change there. On page 3, starting on line 8, that's when we get into the change. So we're now in sexual assault in the second degree. That's a Class B felony, sex felony. And we're talking about engaging in sexual penetration with somebody without the use of force, but without consent. So that's where the new stuff comes in. And then on page 4, starting at line 9, we have sexual contact without the use of force, but also without consent. And so again, that would be new, and that's a Class C sex felony. So that's kind of how we've tiered it. We've still classified the stuff with force at the highest level. That's the current law. But when you're getting into situations where there's without consent but no force, we start to ratchet things down.
All right. Thank you, Senator Keel.
Thank you.
Any follow-up?
Not a follow-up on that specific element. Another issue in the bill if you're ready. Otherwise, you can give someone else.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's along that vein, Casey. So just because we dealt with in a separate bill, and I can't remember this point, but it became law, I think it passed, but it was defensive or marriage as a defensive rape. How does that tie into this anywhere with this and impacts? It was House Bill 49, yeah, but it was SB 49 was the bill? I can't remember. She knows. She shook her head, yes.
I believe it was HB 49. And let me look at that defense one more time. So the defense, the marriage defense, and was removed. So it is no longer, marriage is no longer a proxy for sexual assault. But the defense that remains as far as marriage is that the people are married, and the person consented to the act for which the offender is charged while capable of understanding the nature and consequences of the offender's conduct, which means that's a restatement of the law. If there's consent, then there's no offense, right? So that's where the legislature landed. That's the nature of the marriage defense at this point with respect to what we're talking about.
And it wouldn't fall back to this where you talked before about dating and other, and I don't remember exactly what it said, but we wouldn't need to go. Okay, just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Brief at ease. Senate Judiciary is back on the record, so there's just a little bookkeeping there. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this approach. I think this is a big step forward. In Section 4, when we talk about when consent is at issue, in Number 2, it says that a current dating, social, sexual relationship may not by itself constitute consent. I appreciate that language. It also says the manner of dress of the person, and this would be the victim, may not by itself constitute consent. And I wonder if you could help me understand what the phrase by itself means along with manner of dress.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I want to be clear. That concept is something that's been talked about in the building for a number of years. It is also a concept that appears in other state statutes. Again, Montana has something like that. And so we thought, if the legislature agrees, what is the harm in including it? However, an absolute bar on the manner of dress being considered negates some of the totality of the circumstances analysis and may interfere with a defendant, some defendants, where they have a prior relationship where someone wears some sort of clothing and that signals something special to them. And so they relied on that and then initiated some sort of sexual contact. And we need to have the door open just enough so that in those rare circumstances, a defendant can still use that. And again, it's not going to negate the recklessness entirely, but that's what they're going to be trying to do. They're going to be saying, well, that signaled to me because of every other time that we've engaged, that's what the signal was. And so I initiated something there. It would not ever be okay for someone to say, I met somebody for the first time, they were scantily clad, that meant they consented. Never. But in those rare circumstances where somebody has a prior relationship, where that is how they have communicated in the past, we are afraid to have a complete bar because we're afraid we're going to get a challenge and lose the statute.
Just a follow-up, Mr. Chair. I mean, I certainly appreciate that. It strikes me, though, that what you've described are elements of the previous dating social or sexual relationship, whereas including the manner of dress separately certainly wouldn't justify she was scantily clad and therefore consented. But if that's one of the elements, she was scantily clad and we were grinding on the dance floor and et cetera, and then we went to a private place. That is my concern about making that an element, even if it's an element that may not by itself constitute consent. That concerns me.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I completely understand your concern. Articulating the fact pattern I just did was uncomfortable for me because I understand how that feels. And that, of course, even if a defendant said something like that, we would always look at what else happened. Because just because somebody wore the thing that they wore before doesn't mean that there was consent. We would always have to look to what the other things that had happened. And I also understand that in the light of day, this may not look as attractive as it had previously. And so it really is up to the legislature to decide whether or not they even want this in the bill. I do not want to suggest to the committee that we are getting these kinds of arguments in court. And quite frankly, if a defendant made such an argument, I met her at the bar, she was wearing a short skirt, that kind of thing, they do that at their own peril. So I don't know that this is a problem that we're fixing. It was something that seemed to be important to others. It is something that is included in other states, but I can't tell you how useful it would be. So this is just up to the legislature about whether or not they want to keep it or modify it, but we would caution against a total bar because of that totality of circumstances analysis that we have to do.
I'll just ask, those two words by itself in that context, does it appear someplace else in the legislature, legislation at this time, or is this like the incident?
Mr. Chairman, I think this is the only place where by itself appears in the bill.
The situation.
Yeah. And basically what we're just saying there is that you cannot say someone was wearing X and therefore it was consensual. That's just what it means. But that the by itself also means that if she was wearing X and that's what she's wore before, and then this happened and this happened and this happened, that the defendant is allowed to tell their story. And again, I would submit to the committee that would be a rare instance. That's not typically the types of cases that we see come across our desks, but we are afraid that we would get a challenge if there was a total bar to a defendant being able to defend and use that concept in his defense. It would never be a total defense, would just be a concept that he would be wanting to include.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Schroeder. Are there any other questions? Senator Hughes.
Yeah, and I'm going to just make a comment about the last conversation before I pose my question, and that is, and maybe it's because I'm the female on this committee, but I have had men, old and young, approach me and want us to keep in mind that this can go both directions. So you could have a scantily dressed male as well, and you can have, you know, a male be a victim. So I just want to point that out. And it does happen, and it probably doesn't get brought forward to law enforcement like it should be because it's a cultural thing. But I just want to make that aware. My other comment is in regard to what Senator Schauer brought up about in other states, whether they start, if we watch the rates, will we expect them to go down? And my prediction and my question to you would be that you'd actually initially see them go up, because when you remove the need to prove threat of force or force, there will be more cases that will come forward and possibly convictions. So, but what you would do is we have people that are out there doing this over and over to multiple victims and getting away with it. And so I think over time, when people realize, oh, we can't do that anymore, and that the rates might go down lower. So I would predict they'd initially go up. And then my question is in regard to Section 9, which is on
page 6.
No, was that where it was? Yes. Section 9, lines 9 and 10, we had to have discussion because originally it was genitals, buttocks, or female breasts, and I had discussed with you off the record and with others the idea of adding the pelvis and inner thigh. So we added pelvis and inner thigh, and also my suggestion was to remove the word female. Mm-hmm. And I expected it to say genitals, buttocks, pelvis, inner thigh, or breast. And now I'm seeing genitals and female breasts removed. So as uncomfortable as this conversation is, could you please tell me why those were removed?
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the Department of Law makes no comment on whether or not the committee wants to address male breasts. If the committee wants to address that, that's fine. That's definitely within their purview. I mentioned that to staffer when I sent this language over. So, Mr. King, what we were trying to do with removing female breast, genitals, and semen is to try to separate out the sexual assault from the harassment statutes. Because right now, we have the intent to harass or annoy, and we have the force element, and that's the separation. We're removing the force element from the sexual assault statutes, and so now we've got some bleed over. Those things are overlapping, and we want to avoid a lenity argument, you know, an argument that, well, this lower offense is exactly what I did, and so it's not really a sexual assault. You have to charge me with the harassment. So that's basically what we're trying to avoid. So in order to get that clear separation, we have a mental state that's high. It's an intentional mental state. We also say under circumstances not prescribed. And then we also have the separation of the body parts. So that's about as clear of a separation as you can get. I understand that there may be some concern with that. And so the way to maybe attack that would be to look at what body parts you may want to start adding back into harassment. Because we would still have the intentional mental state and the under circumstances not prescribed language. So we think that would probably be enough for separation, although it would be less clear than the way it is now. But if the committee chose to make that decision, that's okay.
So follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes.
So through the clothing to genitals or breasts, what would that be? That's no longer harassment. It becomes?
It would be a sexual assault.
Okay.
If it was without consent, obviously.
All right. Resolve, Senator Hughes?
Yes.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and with deep apologies to everyone on the committee and in the room. that in the same section, there is a question, I guess, about how this then treats unwanted contact with semen. And when we worked through what became House Bill 49, we had, I think, a good, that ladder of severity. And this change, I don't know if it's intentionally or not, takes away, I guess, a part of that when any undesired contact becomes the felony sex offense. What gets caught up and elevated to a level that's not in keeping with other bad criminal behavior is the non-sexual situation. And I'll just go back. The body, various body fluids, emanations in harassment originated in part out of correctional officers having things flung at them, which is horrible and awful behavior, belongs in our criminal statutes, but isn't a sexual thing. So we may want to make an adjustment here so that we don't automatically take that one and put it up with the sexual felonies of a sexual nature. Otherwise, I think this, I have to say, I think the CS approach to these this unwelcome contact with various body parts without consent really has a good structure to it. Good. An appropriate structure to the crimes.
All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. Are there any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Schroeder.
If I might attempt to address Senator Schauer's issue about, you know, people are at a party and there's a miscommunication or something like that. I want to make sure that the committee understands that we have mental states that are not called out in the statute itself, but the mental states are going to be what is going to guide us in the direction away from the miscommunication. So the mental states are that the person has to act knowingly. So they have to know that they're engaging in some sort of sexual act. And they have to have reckless disregard for the lack of consent. And reckless means that a person is aware of and consciously disregards the substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstances exist. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that disregard of it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of conduct that a reasonable person would observe in that situation. So we think that that's what's going to be the thing that prevents charging of miscommunications. Obviously, it's still going to be a totality of the circumstances analysis, but we don't want people to be afraid to date and engage in the types of behaviors that people normally and healthily do. And so it's the reckless mental state that is going to be what guides us in those charging decisions. And keep in mind, we have to prove these cases to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt, and that is the highest standard in the law. And I also want to make sure that the committee understands that while we may be able to charge more cases, it is not going to be easier to prove these cases. Sexual assault is one of the areas, it's the only area in the criminal code where, but for the circumstances surrounding the offense, the conduct would be legal. People engage in sexual activity all the time between consenting people. It's the circumstances that surround the act. And most of the time, these things happen where there are few witnesses, and without a lot of evidence, physical or otherwise. So these are always going to be very hard to prove. But this gives us a chance to address those cases that we can now, the law is the bar, and this would open the door for us to be able to address additional cases.
Senator Schauer.
Very briefly, thanks Casey for that. I'm just, more than anything, I just want to get on the record that our intent is that we have considered and we are cautious in the approach, because one of the concerns was for younger individuals that might do something, we don't want to see their life ruined, you know, by a stupid move that you go, they may not have done if they were older or more, you know, wise in their years. I understand that, and I know you guys have briefed it. I appreciate the chairman letting this play out, because I think sometimes having this on the record and the legislative intent matters, so that we can look back and go, yeah, that we were conscious of that, And our intent is to not do that. And hopefully, as they look at cases, if it ever came back to what our intent was, that is what the intent of the legislature is to, you know, give you the tools you need, but make sure that we're not hurting citizens and we're respecting both sides of the process. So thanks for that, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Senator Schauer. With no other comments from the committee, Ms. Schroeder, thank you for that last statement. That was a great closing statement. Sorry, Senator Schauer ruined it for you. But please stay at the presenter's table because I believe we have a little more on the next bill. If members do have amendments to this committee substitute, please submit them to my office by 12 p.m. noon on Friday, March 11th. And at this point, I will set Senate Bill 187 aside. And now we're going to bring Senate Bill 189 back before the committee. There is a committee substitute in process. We do not have it before us at this time, but there may be a few questions we can resolve on the version of the bill before us. Senator Myers, did you want to address the question you had?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Schroeder, what I'm looking at is what, at least to a layman, appears to be a bit of a discrepancy. So I'm looking at page 5, lines 2 through 6, and I'm comparing them to page 21, lines 15 through 18. And we're talking about burden of proof, effectively, and saying that I shouldn't be charged here as a prostitute, effectively, because I am a victim of sex trafficking. And I would agree that that's a good policy call. What I'm looking at is that is what we are stating on page 5, but then on page 21, what we are stating is that in order to get the judgment vacated that I was a prostitute and instead I should be treated as a victim here instead of a perpetrator, we are saying you have to now prove that you are no longer – or you have to prove that you were a victim and not the perpetrator. And I realize it's a low burden of the lowest possible burden of proof because we're going at preponderance of the evidence, but it just to a layman it seems a little bit uneven that on the one side you can say I was a victim and you don't have to provide any other proof, and on the other side you say I was a victim and now I have to prove it. Can you address that, please?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Myers. Those two sections are addressing different things. So the language that talks about corroboration of certain testimony not required, that is in relation to when we are prosecuting somebody for sex trafficking. That is the law for all offenses. It's not necessary for us to bring in boatloads of evidence to corroborate. Is that a good idea? Probably not. I don't know why the legislature thought to put that in statute, because it is in statute currently, and all we did is relocate it. But we're talking about proving something beyond a reasonable doubt. Could we do it on the testimony of one witness being the victim and no other corroborating evidence? Probably not. We probably could not meet the beyond a reasonable doubt standard by doing that. However, that is, if we thought we could probably try to make an attempt to do that. There's nothing preventing us from doing that. There's nothing that says you have to have some quantum of corroboration before you charge, although I will tell you that is exactly how we behave. That is exactly how we screen cases. We look for corroborating evidence because we are trying to meet that high, high bar. When you're talking about the other stuff as far as vacating a judgment, the person can prove it however they want. It could be just their testimony. They just have to meet the preponderance of the evidence standard. If they get up there and they tell the judge, this is my story, and the judge is like, you're extremely credible, and they could make a finding. I don't know if they would, but they could. So there's nothing on the other end requiring them, the victim, to bring in boatloads of evidence to get their conviction vacated either.
What?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to think of how to word it effectively. I'm thinking about this not in terms of perpetrating or in terms of prosecuting the sex trafficker. I'm thinking about this in terms of it just still seems like a mismatch to me on the one side or the other from the victim's perspective, that on the one hand, if I say it earlier, I don't have to prove anything. But if I say it later, then I have to prove it. And that's that on the timing side of things, whether it's said before or after the conviction has been made, that concerns me a little bit. Whether or not something is true doesn't depend on when you've said it. And that's what concerns me.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, I understand what you're saying, but it's not the victim in the sex trafficking case who has to prove it. It is the state. So we are going to be looking for corroborating evidence. The statute says we don't have to for whatever reason, but we still have to meet the beyond a reasonable doubt standard. And I can tell you it would be very hard to get there without any corroborating evidence. But that's what the statute says. So, but we still have to meet the beyond the reasonable doubt standard. That is a very high standard. When we're talking about vacating a judgment, it's a preponderance of the evidence. And again, the victim can bring in whatever they want. It could be nothing. It could just be their story. It could be the same for the victim. So in the prosecution, the victim could be telling their story, and in the vacating the judgment, the victim could be telling their story. The onus is not on the victim. For the prosecution, the onus is on the state. For the vacating of judgment, the victim can tell their story. The victim can bring in whatever. The victim can bring in their own witnesses if they want. But it's a different standard. It's a different thing. We're talking about something in a criminal case and then something in a civil action.
I think you kind of got to the heart of the matter there, where you said that in the one, the burden of proof is on the state. In the other, the burden of proof is on the what's the correct word? Plaintiff, filer, however we want to phrase that. And it concerns me that, because that's the same person. Here we're talking about the state proving somebody guilty, and then the person trying to now prove their innocence, and that just very concerning to me, that it should be from the victim's perspective, the burden of proof should be the same, regardless of when it happens.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, in the corroboration section, we're talking about the testimony of the victim. The burden is on the state to prove it, though. This victim does not have to prove anything in a prosecution. We're prosecuting the sex trafficker. We are not prosecuting the victim. We are calling the victim in as a witness. And that section just says that we can call that victim in as a witness and have nothing else. And again, I'm not suggesting to the committee that that's a good idea. And I don't think we would ever do that. But that is what the law is for all other crimes. In the vacating of judgment, we're talking about a civil matter where the petitioner would be having to make a statement to the court or prove something to the court. So it's an entirely different animal. But the burden of proof is different. For the criminal case, it's beyond reasonable doubt. For the civil case, it's preponderance of the evidence. And in both cases, the victim can just tell her story. Again, the burden is not on the victim in the criminal case. In the civil case, the victim will need to prove something.
Mr. Chair, I think, unless somebody else in the committee wants to continue this line of questioning, I think this is something I need to pursue with Department of Law at a later time, but I do still have a little concern there.
Well, today is not the end date for questions on this bill. We are going to have a committee substitute and another opportunity to raise questions on it. Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I only had one on this bill. There was some confusion, I think, in a previous hearing, and I wanted to get a clearer answer on the record. I think this was the last hearing on the bill. It's section 22 on page 17. And we were I asked an unfair question calling for legal research while at the table. And so I wanted to ask Ms. Schroeder, the 72 hours imprisonment if a person has been previously convicted once of a buying sex act. And is that there was some confusion about how long the look back was. Previously convicted once ever in eternity or once in a set period of years? What is the actual researched answer there now that we've had a little time and I'm not springing it on anybody?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the look back for the misdemeanor level, there is no look back. There is no look back. So it could be at any point. I will tell you that in Title 11, there are misdemeanors with lookbacks. There are misdemeanors without lookbacks. And it really is up to the committee whether or not they want to put one in. The lookback in that section where we're talking about enhanced penalties for people who are buying sex, the lookback is 5 years for a felony. So if somebody is accruing convictions at a pretty rapid rate, then it could be increased to a felony. But otherwise, there is no lookback.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. Are there any other questions from the committee on Senate Bill 189? Seeing none, I will put Senate Bill 189 aside at this time. And we have concluded the business on the calendar for the day. Thank you, Ms. Schroeder, for offering the testimony today. Is there any other business before this committee? Seeing none, our next meeting will be Friday, March 11th at 1:30 p.m. And we are adjourned at 2:15 p.m.